So this evening I'd like to reflect on mindfulness, this mindful awareness. And so in a sense of kind of stepping back slightly from the, you know, chipping away at the cold face for the doing it, to kind of, yeah, reflecting on that. What is it? What is that experience? And I'm going to offer some different voices on that, some different maybe angles. It's often, you know, it's described as having many, many facets to it. And different teachers and different traditions will, you know, talk about it, describe it, or define it in different ways. And it can be quite confusing. So I think just to open that up, it can be an arena for our exploration, for our questions and discernment. And, you know, there is a real place for finding some clarity for ourselves, points of what that means, what that practice is, and how to practice that, and be able to have some specificity, you know, some clarity with that. But also, I feel like it's really helpful and important to be able to just have enough of a sense of it, you know, kind of the spirit of mindfulness, you could say, or the sense of it, you know, that be enough for us, you know, and we can explore, we can kind of try that out, and we don't completely understand, but we've kind of got an idea, and then we can check that out against our experience and, you know, hear different ideas and takes on it. And yeah, anyway, so I hope that this is partly a kind of a homage to what is sometimes called the art and science of meditation. You know, that there's this sort of, you could say, scientific part where, you know, it is, you know, you kind of, you get the microscope out, or you really say, now, what's happening, and what's the result of this, and how does that connect with that? Or you're really inquiring, questioning, you're really probing, and there's a sense in which, yeah, kind of almost a sense of objective, you could say, scientific inquiry that can be a mode of practice, or a helpful way of looking, way of inquiring. And then there's the art of practice, which we might sense as something a bit more creative, or a bit more intuitive, a bit more felt, or still has, you know, has truth, has an interest in the truth, but maybe that exploration has just more variety, or more, you know, the sense of how to describe it, isn't it? It's like maybe, you know, kind of creative, when you have a bit of clay and you start, you know, playing with it, and you don't really know what you're going to make, you know. That's kind of the art of meditation, maybe an image. I didn't really know, but we're kind of feeling the material, you know, and seeing what comes. But it's that I'm just trying to evoke a sense of creativity. And I think that mindfulness, you know, this quality of mindful awareness, of present moment awareness, attentiveness that we're cultivating, you know, it could be seen in both ways, or it could be in the service of either of those kind of modes or avenues of practice. So I hope that that you can listen and just take what's helpful, or, you know, just let it float through and see what resonates. See which particular words or definitions, or, you know, sometimes, you know, just think, oh, there's a particular quality thing. Oh yeah, that feels like something I want to highlight for myself. So as well as considering a little bit that question of what this is, I would also like to think a little bit with you about what is it for? What is it for? You know, and again, no one answer to that. So I want to start by reading you a story, a short story, that I really like from one of my favourite books that has been a companion for me for many, many years, which is Pema Chodron, When Things Fall Apart. Again, one of those people who feels that everything's always falling apart. It's been quite a theme. It's a wonderful book with many, many wonderful teachings in it. She's trained in the Tibetan tradition, an American woman trained in the Tibetan tradition, for those of you who don't know her. And this is a story that she gathered, and it's in this book. I just want to read it to you because I felt that it's a bit dramatic in a way, but I think it could be one illustration of the power of mindfulness. Okay, so she says, I once attended a lecture about a man's spiritual experiences in India in the 1960s. He said he was determined to get rid of his negative emotions. He struggled against anger and lust. He struggled against laziness and pride. But mostly he wanted to get rid of his fear. His meditation teacher kept telling him to stop struggling. But he took that as just another way of explaining how to overcome his obstacles. Finally, the teacher sent him off to meditate in a tiny hut in the foothills. He shut the door and settled down to practice. And when it got dark, he lit 3 small candles. Around midnight, he heard a noise in the corner of the room. And in the darkness, he saw a very large snake. It looked to him like a king cobra. It was right in front of him, swaying. All night, he stayed totally alert, keeping his eyes on the snake. He was just so afraid that he couldn't move. There was just the snake and himself and fear. Just before dawn, the last candle went out and he began to cry. He cried not in despair, but from tenderness. He felt the longing of all the animals and people in the world. He knew their alienation and their struggle. All his meditation had been nothing but further separation and struggle. He accepted, really accepted wholeheartedly, that he was angry and jealous, that he resisted and struggled, and that he was afraid. He accepted that he was also precious beyond measure, wise and foolish, rich and poor, and totally unfathomable. He felt so much gratitude that in the total darkness he stood up, walked towards the snake and bowed. Then he fell sound asleep on the floor. When he awoke, the snake was gone. He never knew if it was his imagination or if it had really been there. And it didn't seem to matter. As he put it at the end of the lecture, that much intimacy with fear caused his dramas to collapse and the world around him finally got through. So I feel like one of the things that story illustrates is the depth and the pervasiveness of our resistance to being present. You know, just so, you know, for different reasons, isn't there? You know, you think of today and really even right now. Like, you know. We often don't really want to be here. No, for whatever reason. And yet, this shift to awareness, which is that, you know, right then in that moment, there is, feels like this. Resistance feels like this. So perhaps as the days go on and we begin to realize that there's this possibility of actually being present, whatever's going on, you know, that we keep kind of realizing we're or maybe waiting for a better moment, you know, then I'll be aware. when my stomach stops hurting. Right? You know, when I can get out of here, go outside. Now I can be aware. When I'm away from these people. Yeah. So I think there's something, isn't it, again, this sort of simple but actually very radical kind of shift in our life, that to really be with things as they are is actually profoundly weird sometimes, really, because we're not doing our usual thing of reacting or avoiding or arguing or, you know, blaming ourselves or trying to fix it or. And how does that feel? What's that like? Who am I then? So it's like an acquired taste, maybe. I was also reading in this book, in Pema's book, about how, you know, there's this kind of wise hopelessness. We kind of give up, kind of just, well, if it could just be a little bit different, you know, then... What if, you know, give up, like, you know, that sense of, again, demanding that things be other than they are. And this is not the same as giving up a sense of being present, of being potentially, you know, available to life and able to respond. But it's different, it's a different quality. So again, yeah, I guess part of this is that we're learning to kind of understand this mindful awareness, this ability to bear something in mind, which is a kind of way of that when we bring our attention to the breathing, say right now you might be aware of your body, aware of your breathing, just aware of my voice, and you can you, it's like you can have a sense that by bearing the hearing the voice, that you're also bearing presence with yourself and other sounds and feelings and maybe thoughts. So, or when you're with your breathing, you know, it's not like the way we're teaching is not exclusive to everything else, but it's like it's a one way of understanding. It's like a frame to look through, like a picture frame, you know, like of a picture. So we have our mindfulness of listening, and we look through that, and we listen through that. So, oh, listening, steady with that, noticing feelings and thoughts about the talk and feelings in the body, but we're steadying ourselves with listening, mindfulness of listening. So there are these different ways of establishing mindfulness. Don't just establish it in one way. And finding, understanding that's really helpful in our life. So as we do walking meditation, we're establishing our mindfulness in the walking, in our body, walking. And we're still aware of sights and sounds and stones and other people, but we're looking in a way through that frame of walking. And it gives us a reference point and an anchor. It's another, all these different images. Can be confusing, so just finding what makes sense to you. And it might be just, yeah, very, very simple sense of feeling your bottom on the seat and listening. And it's that, just that simple. But you know, it's like, you know, hearing is happening. This is another way of understanding that it's not just a, you know, hearing. And so, you know how you can walk somewhere or drive somewhere or whatever, and then you get there and you think, God, blimey, how did that happen? You know, I don't remember a thing. You're on automatic. So all the time you were probably seeing and hearing and not bumping into the trees, you know, but This is knowing that you're, you know, hands on the wheel, feet on the pedals, you know, you're knowing it as it's happening. We're knowing experience as it's happening. And I think one of the reasons why this is such sometimes a journey for Westerners particularly is our tendency to self-judgment and commentary and analysis and just a very busy sort of oh yeah, that's interesting, and this and that and the other, that to simply know, it's just a kind of very sort of unusual, not something we learn in school, is it? Not in my school, anyway. And nobody ever told me to, you know, be aware of myself. They told me to do things, but not to be aware of what was happening. It's really interesting, and I think, gosh, how different would my education have been if I had that there? Now we have this Mindfulness in Schools project, if you might have heard about. Fantastic thing. It's teaching young people. And I know there's some people doing it here in Finland, so if you're interested, ask us afterwards. It's, you know, for children, so children can really take to this, some of the basic kind of, you know, idea of it, practice of it, really use it. I mean, they're not so, you know, well, what is this really, and is it this or is it that? No. What does Trungpa Rinpoche say about it? What does Suzuki Roshi say about it? But it's also perhaps for me, it's an interest in exploring. So I have lots of other just here's another thought about what it is, which seems very relevant to some of what we've been talking about so far. Stephen Batchelor said, awareness is a process of deepening self-acceptance. That whatever it observes, it embraces. So, you know, we keep going on about, you know, being with what's happening. And it's almost like this, one of the things we deeply long for, isn't it, in a way, is a sense of self-acceptance, of could I just finally be okay with myself already, you know, for goodness sake, that would be so great. Well, I don't know, I have that, I don't know if you do. But, and that actually, what this is sort of pointing to is that actually the mindfulness, the awareness is doing that work for us. And that's, it's like that's, so every time we can be with the difficult body sensation without, you know, getting completely lost in the fear or the story, whatever. Every time we can feel that sort of horrible pattern of self-judgment, self-loathing come up and feel the sickness of that and the ugh, and not buy into it and not be lost in it and not judge it and not push it away. Every moment of that is a moment of deepening self-acceptance. You know, and it's almost happening without us realizing it. And it's, I think that's very beautifully put. So, the question of what mindfulness is for, it has so many, it's said to be the sort of key wholesome quality that has, it supports everything wholesome. So that's a bit, you know, we could just go on about this all week. You know, maybe it's like, so every wholesome quality is supported by mindfulness. It's, that's interesting in itself, isn't it? Like, why is that? But that when we are actually able to be present, that we're not in our reactivity, and something about our natural inclinations towards kindness or towards, you know, this desire for well-being can kind of come forth and be sort of honoured and actually guide, because it's not sort of covered over, like Paul was talking about the hindrances, a sense of our well-being and our okayness and our kindness sort of getting covered over with all this sort of, you know, algae and, you know, windy weather and all of this, but that there's something like an open creative space that mindfulness is, an open creative spacious allowing space. And somebody came up with this list, which I found on a wall in an office, and I actually don't know where it comes from, but I liked it, so I made a photocopy of it, with permission. And it's somebody's idea of what they're calling the features of mindfulness, but I think that this is touching on what the fruits or the benefits of mindfulness are. And I'll just go through it, and I think when I was thinking about sharing this with you, I thought one of the reasons for sharing it maybe is to inspire us. You know, look, we'll sell it. We'll see, look, if you practice mindfulness, you get this and this and this and this and this, like, and loads of that. So, you know, come early, buy a lot or something. It's like 2 for 1. But, you know, it's like sometimes with loving kindness practice, you read through the 11 benefits, because it's like, yeah, okay, there's a lot. And I don't think this is a comprehensive list either. So I'll just read them and see if you recognize any of these fruits of mindfulness. Self-awareness. Yeah. Actually, just on that one, I think it's worth pointing out that self-awareness is not self-consciousness. I think this is a very interesting difference. Yes, and as you know, self-consciousness is so painful. It's like me and I and oh, and my thing. And I don't want them to look. And it's got a lot of me in it. It's got a lot of kind of, you know, that self and me and. self-awareness is somehow, you know, more than just, oh, this is happening and these thoughts and feelings. It's still definitely, you know, if you like, my experience. But it's more kind of, it's less about, you know, identification and then the kind of shame and embarrassment about it. It's more just like, wow, yep, feeling like this, not very nice. Oh yeah, this is great, good, ooh, lovely feeling, okay. Can you see I'm kind of holding my arms like, because it feels like that difference, you know, it's like, oh no, I'm feeling like this, don't look, you know, ah, it's hiding, you know. Or like, you know, just like that middle way, it's also not acting out and going around and telling everybody, look, I'm feeling like this. Which is in a way, kind of, isn't it, the opposite pole of, oh no, don't be, I'm feeling like this. You know, it's still got a lot of me and I in it. It's something like the middle way between that. It's just like, oh. And you don't have to hide it. You don't have to hide from it. Now that's liberating, isn't it? And that might be an aspiration, certainly, you know, for some of us. Wow, what would it be to not have to hide any of your experience from yourself, you know, let alone from other people. Yeah, so anyway, so self-awareness is not self-consciousness. Feeling, so it's capacity to experience emotional tone of an event or situation. So this capacity to of mindfulness, we talked a little bit about this, I can't remember if it was in a group or where it was, but yeah, there's another theme, isn't it, where we're beginning to open up to our emotional experience, and that in the mindfulness and the steadiness that we're growing is kind of helping to again create the space and the steadiness for that, so that it's not, we're not just overwhelmed and blown away by it. And that, being able to bring that to our life, I mean, wow, what a skill. You know, whether it's difficult or lovely, you're in a group, you're in a relationship with somebody, being able to actually pick up on the emotional tones that are going on and not, you know, be really scared and frozen and run away. Again, what a great aspiration, you know, I feel like, you know, to be able to be in life and again, not that sort of image of perfection, so I'm always going to be 100% emotionally attuned and I'm never going to shut down, I'm always, no, it's, that's probably going to keep happening. But I, as an aspiration, I think it can, you know, yeah, if I can, something's happening and it's really activating me, I'm getting angry or whatever, but I can just be present with that and notice that. Or someone else is coming at me with whatever it is and I'm like, okay, whoa. Yeah, you know, again, open. Little story here, I don't know how far we're going to get through this list, but it feels important to, you know, maybe you, when I, long, quite a while ago, I was a teacher, and it was almost like being really mindful completely by shock, not by intention. I could be mindful by accident. I was teaching in a school, and this teenage girl completely lost it with me, screamed her head off at me, with actually some back, where behind her and a bit of the school where she felt nobody else could hear, because it was, and it was just, I just remember this kind of way, blast of rage coming at me, and just almost in the shock, I didn't shut down, I just like, wow, almost like opening up and letting the thing just pass through you, like, you know, like sound waves. Have you ever had that, when the plane, a really loud jet goes zoom overhead and you just stay open? It's just this giant feeling, and it just kind of goes through you. And I did that, and it was really an important experience for me and for her, I think. And, you know, later on then she came back and I think I got some flowers. I can't remember. But anyway, the story had a good ending. You know, she was somebody I had a good relationship with. And just, you know, maybe our relationships can actually be much more resilient and much more fruitful and more, you know, again, more fully human, because we're not so scared. You know, sometimes I think that for my husband, I'm so scared of him being angry with me that I'm just creeping around trying to you know, and it's like trying to learn, no, it's okay. And in some of those close relationships is where it can be, you know, most difficult, can't it? Because the stakes are so high. You can't risk that. So anyway, lots and lots of thoughts on that. I hope you can have a sense of that, how the mindfulness is so directly relevant to that. This is an interesting one. It says foresight, the capacity to predict outcomes. I'm not sure about this one. You could think more about this. But yeah, I think it's interesting. Yeah, you know, that actually, because you know, there's that clarity and you kind of, maybe you can see a sort of sense of the consequences of this. You know, the Buddha often recommends, you know, consider the consequences. And you can kind of, oh yeah, if I say that, you know, then that, oh, that's going to, what if I, you know, positively, negatively, wholesome, non-wholesome, it can really help guide us. Or sometimes, yeah, on a very practical level, I know, say, when I'm planning for a retreat, part of that planning process will be, I'll imagine myself here. And I'll think, and I'll sort of think it through, and I'll, okay, so what if we do that? And obviously you can't completely plan something like that. You could sort of, I could sort of think through some of the, oh, we better think about that, and yeah, then if we have that there, we won't be able to, well, you know, anyway, maybe you know what I mean, but it's maybe in a very, very developed mind, a very fully developed mindfulness, or maybe we have those moments where, you know, the mindfulness is very, very strong, and we just, yeah, we can just see that's part of the insight, understanding of cause and effect, the understanding of cause and effect and consequence. Courage. The capacity to step outside the bounds of convention. I think that's an interesting one. Why would mindfulness help us with that? I think that's really, isn't it, something to do with when we're not so dependent on our, you know, particular conditioning and patterns, or this is what I do because I've done it, you know, and this is my family background and this is my culture and we do this and we don't do that. And that actually it's giving you a ground, a different kind of ground in being present, in maybe not being so dependent on other people's approval, on, you know, needing to fit a particular stereotype or role, you know. So I actually won't go through the whole list now, but I mean, other things to do with memory, that's a big one, I think, that's one of the meanings of the word sati, which really means memory, remembering, calling to mind, and how mindful awareness in the present is helping to give us access to our memory, to our knowledge, to our wisdom, you know, some of which, you know, maybe it is based on sort of previous experience and reflection, like being able to actually use that, you know what I mean? It's like, do we ever learn? You know, being able to actually learn from the past and then remember, oh, when I did this before, it was like this, and did that really, sati has this aspect of recollection, of remembering, of calling up our wisdom, calling up our knowledge of the Dharma, knowledge of ourself, knowledge of the situation, all different kinds. Anyway, I do want to move on, but it maybe helps to inspire us, you know, and maybe many riches else that you could mention, and you know, we could probably make a much longer list. But one of the benefits that the Buddha particularly emphasized, and I want to say a little bit about what the Buddha said about this. He said, "My friends, it is through the establishment of the lovely clarity of mindfulness that you can let go of grasping after past and future, overcome attachment and grief, abandon all clinging and anxiety, and awaken an unshakable freedom of heart here and now." This path, this practice, has the power to deliver us from delusion. It has the power to free us from greed, hatred, and delusion. And all of that, you know, all of those ways that we get lost in struggle and in ignorance. So I think I want to read that again, and maybe we'll come back at another point in the week and maybe talk more about the more specific teachings of the Buddha on mindfulness, which we, Paul and I, are drawing on as we go through the week. But I think for now it feels like, yeah, I want to kind of round this off with that encouragement to all of us to find our own way with this, to really find a connection with what that practice is for us and what it is for. You know, what inspires us? Maybe some of those things, maybe other things. Why? Because we need encouragement, we need inspiration, because this is not easy. We're in some ways going against a lot of very, very strong conditioning. And to have some sense of the potential power of this, you know, for bringing ease, for bringing, you know, support to our relationships, for enriching our life in so many ways. And as the Buddha describes, this real potential in each one of us for a very complete freedom, for a very complete liberation of the human heart and mind, and that is a very real possibility for each one of us. So I'll finish just by reading that again. So the Buddha: "My friends, it is through the establishment of the lovely clarity of mindfulness that you can let go of grasping after past and future, overcome attachment and grief, abandon all clinging and anxiety, and awaken an unshakable freedom of heart here and now." So let's just sit quietly together for a couple of minutes.